Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Penix back to pass, looking for London, and he's wrapped up and thrown down for a sack by Ed Oliver. Ride him, Cowboy!
We'll talk with Chris Brown coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. Normally at 8:30, but they got back a little later, so we pushed some times a little bit. We'll talk to Chris at 9 o'clock. We'll talk to you right now at 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. Jeremy and Joe on the Buffalo Bills Football Tuesday. Highlights of the game brought to you by Northland Workforce Training Center. Train for what's next. Bills fall to Atlanta 24-14. The Falcons have a good defense. Starting to see, you know, as we get deeper into the season, you see trends, and Atlanta's defense, aggressive, fast. Right there with, like, Minnesota blitzes a lot. Cleveland's really good. And Atlanta is near the top in terms of how good they can play defensively. And they looked the part, shutting down a Bills team that had, well, now we got two straight weeks of the offense not getting to that magic 30 number. 803-0550, our phone number, and 1-888-552-550. Bigger picture stuff. Well, you and I were talking about it late last week. We talked about this in the break. Could they come out of the bye and have Shaq Thompson be their middle linebacker and have Bernard move over into the Matt Milano role, and like that's your new linebacker tandem? Yeah. Maybe, because
I feel like that has real potential to be their best combo.
You also have to wonder if, I mean, we had brief freakouts about this during the preseason.
Yeah.
Are Jordan Poyer and Gabe Davis going to be starting games? And
we're getting there.
They're getting less and less far-fetched as ideas. Poyer played yesterday, and
yeah,
was better than Rapp.
Limited. It's not like he was amazing,
right? Right. So maybe
Rapp was just Rapp was not doing anything last night. Like, he was on the Bijan run. He overruns the gap there, and McDermott talked about players missing their gaps. I think Rapp is probably one of the guys that he's mentioning
on the Bijan touchdown run. Like, if you go watch that Bishop, it's just sometimes you see it from Bishop. He's just passive. He's passive. He does not get up there and try and, you know, pop Bijan.
He's not confident to attack a guy.
Right, right. Yeah. Pop and try to get him to the 24-yard line. Instead, he stops and runs to the sideline and can't, I mean, whatever. I'm no expert of safety play. I think their safeties are a mess.
It feels like Poyer might not have the juice to go make that tackle, but wouldn't Poyer try to? Wouldn't he fire in? Wouldn't he know where to go? It's why he's here, isn't it? It's like he knows what to do in that spot. He just might not have the ability to bring him down anymore. But I think I'd rather have that than at least. But who would they bench is a question. Like how far will they go?
Who's the highest profile player that would see the bench?
Like
would it be Rapp? Would it be Bishop? Would it be Bernard?
How high profile a player should Taylor Rapp be to bench?
Not high profile at all.
Like he's just a guy in the league that makes what's his contract?
He makes like 3.6 a year. He's a guy.
Whatever. Right. I mean, Milano might feel a little different if he's healthy because it's Matt Milano. He's meant a lot. Trey White, same thing. Now they've already toyed with that, so maybe they would be willing to bench Trey White. Maybe they'd be willing to bench anybody. Would they be willing to move Bernard? He is the captain on the defense. He's been the signal caller for multiple years, and they're going to move him to a position that he hasn't played since his rookie season. However, that is his natural position, I think. So it's a good question. I feel like they probably should do it, and this would be the time you want to do it, is during the bye week, because if they come out of the bye and Bernard is still playing middle linebacker, it's not a thing I'm thinking about for the rest of the year.
Right about now, I just worried about that extension because maybe it's a bad stretch, whatever it might be, but doesn't look like a good spot.
The Bernard contract?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's the highest paid linebacker in football.
That's right.
What is it, $8 million? He signed for half of what Tremaine Edmonds signed for 4 years ago or 3 years ago. But right, like he's, again, like the Bijan run, a lot of things are going to go wrong. But Bernard, you're going to play him. Sal just talked about this. You're going to play him right on the line like that. And that's what happens. Bernard moves up to the line of scrimmage almost to show a blitz. And then what happens? It's, oh, Bernard's going up against a center, and he's going to be taken out of the play. and a lot of linebackers would be taken out of the play, but some linebackers would fight their way back into it. And Bernard is just, it's over. You get him on alignment, it is over, over.
Yep. Liam in North Buffalo is up. Hey, Liam, good morning.
Hey, guys. So basically, I want to bring up, you know, obviously this team has a lot of warts, and I know a lot of people, you know, check Twitter, right? Like, Fire McDermott. I mean, I think Bean, I have my criticism of McDermott, but I think, you know, Bean is probably a bigger issue to this team than McDermott at this time. But also, basically, my only question was, I want to bring up, they do this every year, right, since 2020, that they lose two games in a row,
yep.
And it looks bad, and, you know, then they kind of get it together. But to me, this feels different than those other years, or so I don't know if I'm just being crazy, or is this just something they're going to get together?
Yeah, it's a fair question, like, what is different this year than last year? Last year, when they lose in Baltimore 35-10, it's no Bernard, no Milano, mm-hmm. no Taron Johnson. And the game was still there to be had until a goofy trick play, and then, like, all right, fine. Baltimore ran away from you. And the loss in Houston was Allen goes 9 of 30, and they don't have anybody that can separate. This year, what is it? Well, they've a lot more injuries this time, spread around more positions than just those big three. But I guess what's different is, what can you count on? You can count on Allen and the offensive line and James Cook. And I'm
pretty confident you can count on Kincaid to some extent.
Okay,
right,
I think that's right.
Should I not say that? Because I don't know if, can I put him in there if I can't count on him to be healthy?
I don't know.
There's injuries with him back-to-back years now where he's missing games, and I don't know.
Here's what's different for me. What's different with last year and this year, 4-2 and 4-2, and still need receiver and still have questions on defense. There are two major differences. One, the Patriots are here.
Yeah.
That's big. And number two, I think the Chiefs' offense is about to, like, go nuclear, and you aren't going to be up for it. Not that you were before. But these,
because on defense, you're at your question, like, when I play that game, who can I count on?
Nobody.
Yeah, like,
last year, the last 2 years,
I don't know a single thing.
The last 2 years, you could have tried to play the Chiefs in a certain way, and their offense could be held down. And whatever, they're 3-3, so the Bills are 4-2, the Chiefs are 3-3. But I just think their defense will.
Yeah,
I don't even have the adjectives to use for what they're going to do to the Bills secondary. I am very, very concerned about it.
You can count on Taron Johnson still.
Probably
one of your guys, Bosa.
Mm-hmm.
Bosa's the king of almost, though, this year, isn't he? He's getting close, and he's just not. He's not getting there.
No,
that happened yesterday. He almost got to Penix, and in a split second,
he's doing his job. He's doing what he's paid to do. He's not a game wrecker, and he's not paid like one. He's paid like a guy that can come and make a difference and make some plays. And I think I'm happy with what Bosa has done. Rousseau has started to look really good again. Like, that's nice to see him there. And Deion Walker's good, and Ed Oliver's good. I actually think
the D-line's actually in decent shape.
I think the D-line is okay. Now they have major injuries. If, you know, Daquan Jones is out, I don't know what they're going to do there.
Yeah.
But.
And Sanders is already out. Yeah, the Daquan Jones injury could be big.
Yep. So what's different? The competition. You know, you don't always get it to go linear. You're kind of chasing what a team might be.
Yep.
The thing that's just kind of always wild to me, I saw Howard. Howard's going to pick the Bills probably tomorrow. And he came in on something. He's hot on Everybody Eats. He really is. He was tweeting about how the last 2 weeks the Bills have lost games as the opposing team doesn't give one flip about Everybody Eats. It's 12 targets for Diggs as he steals your lunch. And then it's 16 for London as he does the same. Like this, we used to get into it with Dable. When people would call and say they don't run the ball enough. The Bills, whatever, they're an amazing team, an amazing franchise. Their quarterback's awesome. He won the MVP. They do a lot of things. Sometimes I feel like they're trying to thread some sort of needle rather than just be awesome. You don't have to thread this needle. You don't have to run the ball great. The Chiefs have never done it well, and they have a bunch of Super Bowls. You don't have to be great on defense. You just have to play great in games. In the playoffs, you have to have answers in the playoffs, and they consistently don't against the Chiefs. They get out-coached. Andy Reid always has an answer for them, and that's when they have good defenses. What are the answers going to be when they have a bad defense? So roster management, coaching, injuries. They've got a lot going on. They're going to win 13 games, and I don't know if that's going to be enough to win the division. 12. 12 might not be enough to win the division for the Bills. Because we're looking at best, a split with New England. And I got to start looking at the second tiebreaker. The good news is they lost to the Falcons. That's an NFC team. Like that's there's part of your good news.
Right. Yeah.
803-0550. 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Trying to thread a needle, I guess, you know. Complimentary football, complimentary football. There was no Lombardi trophy actually says complimentary football on it. None of them do. You can just win being amazing at one thing. You probably have to play some defense, though. And this team is not up for that right now. 803-0550 to join us on WGR.
Back to pass. Blitz coming. Allen gets rid of it. Complete to Shakir. Trying to get for the first down. Shakes two tacklers. And he's got the first down out to the 40. Oh, Khalil Shakir goes shake and bake and leaves two defenders in the dust. Back to pass, has time, fires, and it's complete for a touchdown in the end zone to Dawson Knox. Dawson Knox with a 19-yard touchdown reception, and the Bills are an extra point away from tying it up here early. Fakes the handoff, rolls right, throws to Davis, down to the 10, the 5, dives for the pylon, and he's in. A 17-yard catch and run for Ray Davis. His first touchdown of the season, and the Bills are back in the game. Penix back to pass, looking for London, and he's wrapped up and thrown down for a sack by Ed Oliver. Ride him, Cowboy!
Well, at least there were some highlights. You hear him right there. Chris Brown of the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Not enough of that, though, for the Bills. Last night in Atlanta, an early Monday Night Football game, an hour earlier than normal. Because of the other game that was going on as well. Bills drop their second straight game. This one to the Atlanta Falcons, 24-14, the final score in Atlanta. Sal Capaccio with you here on the Nordtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Welcome in. We are on a Buffalo football Monday on a Tuesday, if that makes sense to you. We're going to kind of do all the Monday stuff on a Tuesday here today. So that means streaming right now, live. On YouTube, are we on the Twitch too? Oh, and are we on the Twitch? Okay, good. I don't check the Twitch. I check the YouTube. I see the bullpen there. So, howdy, bullpen. What's up? That's the people coming in the chat box. Check us out, WGR 550 on YouTube. You can chat in there with us live as we're talking. You can talk with each other. So, thank you very much. Hello, everybody who's in there today. And as it always works, I can see it sometimes when I check in, but I'm going to let you kind of talk there because I got to talk about the game and I got to take phone calls. And that's what this show is about after a game, whether it's a Tuesday, a Monday night game, a Sunday night game, a Thursday night game, a Sunday afternoon game, a Saturday night game, whatever it is these days. We come on the radio the next morning, we talk about the game. And, oh, sorry, look at that. That is a terrible move by me. By the way, I've been getting way more no-caller ID calls than anything. It was a no-caller ID. Should have showed it on there. And I have a story I really want to tell about that, but I kind of don't want to tell it about like spams and prank calls and things like that and no caller ID, but I'm not going to get into it right now, but that could be another one of those. Anyway, sorry about that. All right, so 803-0550, somebody's calling, 803-0550, that is my cell phone, but 803-0550 is the number to call here on the Nordtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. And when you do that, no, I did not drop an S-bomb, Michael. I did not say anything. I just said that I had, I don't know what you heard. Anyway, give me a call and tell me what you think. Let me reset what I was about to say a minute ago. That when you call a Monday or Tuesday or Thursday or whatever show after a game, you're going to be emotional, winning or losing, but especially losing. And I'm here to take that for you. I'm here to listen to you, to talk back and give you feedback. We do that here, okay? I always say it, though. Let's try to keep it in a good space where we're not just going crazy and it's not worth it. There comes a point where if you get too emotional and too irrational, then it becomes kind of just lost in the noise of what we're trying to actually accomplish here, which is talk about the football team in an intelligent way, right? That's what we try to do. But I give you that space today, and I'm going to give you that space. Normally, I am off on a Tuesday because the Bills play on a Sunday and their day is off on a Tuesday. But not today, because I'm here for you at 803-0550. So give me a call here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Monday on a Tuesday. Brought to you by and presented by Catholic Health, the right way to care. And brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. And by Northtown Hyundai, Western New York's premium Hyundai dealership. Shop online at northtownhyundai.com. We have a lot to get to today, including our injury report, our extra point from the sidelines, our sit-up, our stand-down, our hey buddy, all that on the table today, normally on a Monday, but today on a Tuesday. I'll set up the rest of the week for you later, but we really need to talk about what happened yesterday. The Bills lose 24-14, and it was a disastrous first half for the defense and not a good first half for the offense. It was a really good first half, second half for the defense, disastrous second half for the offense. You add it up, the Bills drop to 4-2, drop out of first place in the division, drop out of the top four in the standings and seedings in the AFC. They're now the number five seed. Lots of football to be played, but those are the consequences of playing the way they've played the last couple weeks. Folks, this game started. It started the very first. I mean, we can go before that with injuries. I'll get to that. But this game, the very first play was a tone setter for the game, which is a turnover by the Bills defense, but called back because of offsides. I'm telling you, the first play of the game was huge. Huge. If the Bills get the turnover on the first play of the game and they have the ball at midfield, they probably score on the first drive, I think. I mean, they already did. And they're in the lead. They're not trailing 7-0. And now it totally changes the tenor of the game, the stadium, everything. But why did it get called back? Because they were offsides, lining up, just lining up properly. By Greg Rousseau. Lining up properly by Ed Oliver later in the game that would have brought up a second down and like, what, 13, 14, 15, something like that. But instead, it's first and five because of an offsides. And then the Falcons run Bijan Robinson 81 yards for a touchdown when they would have been in a totally different situation on long yardage. These are basic things in football the Bills are not getting right now. These are basic fundamentals that this coach, this coaching staff, this organization has preached for years. And if you think that, well, that must be coaching, hey, that's fine, you want to go there. Do you think they don't work on it? Even last night after the game, Sean McDermott in the postgame presser, these are things they talk about. These are things they go over. They rep in practice. They're cognizant of it. Don't go offside. Don't line up offside. That happens. These are little details. Details matter in the league. In a league that has such margin for error, such small margin for error because the teams are all professionals. They all get paid. They all have talent. You can't allow those little details to beat you. And the Bills have allowed the little details to beat them each of the last 2 weeks. And it starts with penalties and then turnovers. And of course, two turnovers in this one, both by Josh Allen, forcing one ball, it seemed like, and then the other one late in the game, kind of in garbage time. And again, I could say force it, but two turnovers. They've lost the turnover battle two weeks in a row after not losing it for 26 straight games. That was going to change at some point. But they are not, right now, good enough to overcome that. And that's disappointing and depressing. Man, they should be good enough. They haven't been good enough. The defense was abysmal in the first half. It gave up 335 yards in the first half. Holy cow. For anybody who wants to shout about the defense, the first half was your day. It was your night to tell everybody how you are so right about how terrible this defense is. 335 yards allowed in the first half alone. Bijan Robinson just getting off. Drake London going nuts, right? Offense was okay, pretty pedestrian, only 7 points. You need more out of them. Second half, holy cow. For all of that you want to say about the defense in the first half, and that counts, first half counts, they were terrific in the second half. The defense was great in the second half. The Atlanta Falcons, second half drives to start the half. 5 plays, 8 yards and punt. 8 plays, 25 yards, blocked field goal. 3 plays, 8 yards and punt. They had 41 yards of offense in the first 3 drives leading into the final drive. You know what that led to? The Bills getting the ball, down 1 score, 3 different times. 3 different times. An offense led by Josh Allen, the league MVP, Superman, best in the league, arguably, whatever. An offense that has Josh Allen had the ball three different times in the second half, down one score, and mustered 0 points. After the first drive when they scored, I'm talking about, because then they were down one score. Not only 0 points, 24 yards, 5 yards, 0 yards. 8 plays, 3 plays, 3 plays. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 plays, 29 yards. In 3 drives, having the ball with a chance to tie it, 1 score needed. That's it. Joe Brady runs a Elijah Moore jet sweep on 3rd and short. Now, Eric Wood brings up the point, and he wasn't defending it. I just want to bring up the point and say, if you say, why would you do it? I guess the thinking would be, hey, if you line up in tush push, lots of defenders go in the middle, they try to stop it, and then you give it to Elijah Moore on the outside and he can break one. Totally get it. I don't care. I need Josh Allen or James Cook to handle the ball in that situation. I need either Josh Allen to go forward twice or James Cook to go forward twice or one of each. They were running the ball well. They had just had a 73-yard drive. A couple drives before that, I guess I'd say. Running the ball with James Cook. Same as last week. It was the same play, basically, but this time last week was Dawson Knox. He fumbles. This week, Elijah Moore, he fumbles. And what really hurt is, here's the details. Even if that gets stopped for no gain, you can go for it. But if you fumble and go back 4 yards, that's when you punt. And that's what happened. Josh Palmer leaving this game was huge for the Bills. Huge. The Bills had a great matchup with Josh Palmer they loved, and they went to him early, 45 yards. They went to him again, 15 yards. He gets hurt on that play. At 60 yards before halftime, he gets hurt. He was a big part of the game plan, and when he got hurt, the Bills had no answers at wide receiver. Keon Coleman did not step up and play bigger than he is or needs to be in a couple situations. They could not find an answer to get the ball out in short, just pitch and catch situations like the Falcons did with Drake London all night, it seemed like, at least in the first half. I mean, Drake London was just like kind of, you know what he did? He did the whole thing do you ever play when you're in the street? Go to the fire hydrant and turn around. Like, that's Drake London last night. Go to the fire hydrant and turn around. I'm just going to throw it to you. Nobody's there. Right? The Bills didn't have that. They don't have, I don't know. It's not just throwing deep. Like, people want to do that. It's all of it. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is on offense right now. They do not have the separators at wide receiver. But look, I will say, when you have Dalton Kincaid out, and you know that, and then you have Curtis Samuel out, and then you lose Josh Palmer, there are only so many options you have. No, most teams can't go 4 or 5 deep and stay like, oh yeah, we're going to be fine. As much as you want, everybody eats. You just can't do that. When you're throwing deep to Tyrell Shavers late in the game, that tells you where you are on your roster. All right, let's get to the phone lines. 803-0550. I've let you load them up enough. I really appreciate that. Let's start it here. Let me see where we are going to go. And let's go to Nate, who's going to start us off. Hi, Nate. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. How you doing?
Thanks for
taking the call.
You got it.
Hey, yeah. I'd like to preface first by saying all the injuries that we had in this game really hindered us offensively, and then all the injuries that we had defensively. But the defense, I thought in the second half, played great. I think the defense, especially the pass rush over the last few weeks, has looked really well in certain spots. But the offense, even with the injuries that we have on offense, I'm not saying Joe Brady should get fired or anything like that, but, you know, he's definitely on the hot seat if this all continues, because I feel like you brought up in the earlier show about passes to running backs. We didn't see mm-hmm. any of that mm-hmm. in this game. There definitely could have been more, especially getting James Cook involved. It feels like we went out there in the second half, had a great drive. The offensive line was feeling it. James Cook was feeling it. And then we go away from it. And not to bring up pass games, but even in the game against Kansas City in the playoffs, we had a beautiful drive where we were running the football. And it seems like that's our identity. That's where how this team was built, was to be a running team, especially getting Cook involved. And then for whatever reason, they just go away from it. And I just, like, it seems like Brady has these weird tendencies, whether it would be personnel or he gets into certain plays. I'm not going to criticize him because he knows a lot more about the game than I do. But just from what I see, even with the injuries last night, we still had guys out there that we could have made plays and not gone three and out and had a better chance to win the game.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nate. Appreciate your call. 803-0550. We are on the YouTube stream at Sal's. I'm sorry. That's my YouTube. At WJR550. So many different platforms. Got to keep them all straight. 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's go to Dennis. I think you're talking there. Let's go to Dennis in Buffalo. Dennis, you got me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I got you, buddy.
I just want to bring up a point. With all the other stuff that's going on, receivers, the defense playing one half, we still have a fundamental problem with the head coach who's mismanaging not only time but timeouts at end of half and games. I mean, last night we get the ball back with, I don't remember the exact numbers, but probably a minute, a little over a minute left.
You're talking the end of the game or the half, just so I know?
The end of the game.
Okay, gotcha.
He makes a great scramble. We get down to the 30. It's probably either about a minute or maybe a little less. I don't remember the exact numbers again. But why wouldn't you kick your field goal there?
Yeah.
Because either way, you got to get an onside kick. Get the points. Now, if you have a successful onside kick, you have the ball at the 50-yard line. You have potential three Hail Mary plays, a pass interference potential, whatever. And they took themselves right out of that potential scenario by just trying to pound the ball into the end zone.
Yeah, well, they didn't try to pound it. I hear you, and I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think there's a point about here and we've talked with Sean about this before. There's a point on the clock where they feel that they have to either kick the field goal or they still have time to go for the touchdown. They had 51 seconds still left. So I think their thinking was, and you don't have to agree with this, Dennis, I'll just give you the insight into what they're thinking, because this happened in the Rams game last year. Remember the Rams game, right? And Sean had addressed this, and what they do is they do have the math. They do it, they think about it, and there's a certain point where they say, okay, let's stop going for the touchdown and we can kick a field goal here. I think they felt with 57 seconds at the Atlanta 25, they still had time to get a touchdown, because if they get it, let's just say, I don't know what their time would be, maybe 40 seconds. Hey, once we get under 40, now we need to kick the field goal. Does that make sense? You don't have to agree with that math, but that's how they've done it with their analytics, basically, is that there's a certain point. There wasn't 20 seconds left, there was a minute. So I understand that. Now I understand your point too. Like, I do think it's kind of a moving target on where you are and how much time is left there.
But then also, if they kick the field goal,
yep,
that gives them more time to get the potential touchdown.
It does, but it's also, but
either,
if, right,
either way,
right,
you have to get the onside kick, right?
That's exactly right. But I understand that. If you kick the field goal, it gives them more time. But what they're thinking is, and again, I'm not defending, I'm just telling you how they view it. If they get the touchdown before, let's say, 45 seconds, there's plenty of time to get in field goal range, too, with an onside kick. So my question would be, and we don't know this right now, how many seconds would have to be on the clock for Sean to say, let's just kick the field goal instead? You know what I mean?
Well, I understand that. I understand their analytics, but then they have a fundamental problem with who's ever coming up.
No, that's just because you think it's a fundamental problem because you don't agree with their math. That's all. But they do it with their math.
Well, I understand that, but their math hasn't worked for several years now, because there's many scenarios where they've mismanaged that time and or timeouts at both the end of a half or the end of a game.
Okay.
I mean, just those two scenarios is my point.
Yeah, I know. They've also won a lot of close games. We've gone through this before, but that's okay. I get it. I know. You always remember the ones that they don't do right. You're not wrong. I get it. Somebody said it last night to me. They should have kicked the field goal, and they probably could have, and they should have, maybe. But I think there's a time, like, it's like, well, if there's under 40 seconds left, you go for the touchdown. They don't always mismanage the clock, folks. I know it's something people say because that's what they love to say. They've also won some close games, and they managed the clock fine against Miami, and they managed the clock fine against New Orleans. So, I don't know. Let's go to Gabe in Amherst. Hi, Gabe.
Hey, Sal. First time long.
Yep. Go ahead, buddy.
Yep. So, basically, I agree with your point about the lack of attention to detail, and I just think it comes down to the fact that we just don't have the talent on either side of the ball, especially when it comes to wide receiver and just our defense in general. Kind of put the spotlight on Brandon Bean. I know McDermott gets a lot of heat when it comes to how games get played out, but just currently how the roster's
comp, like, put together. It's, we don't have any talent on either side of the ball. We have our top guy last night who got hurt is realistically, he's like a low end wide receiver 2, high end wide receiver 3. And I just don't think that's what's going to get it done if we want to win the Super Bowl.
I hear you. And I think it's a big point from a lot of people today. It's been a point on this radio station. We know that, right? The GM came on here and defended the wide receiver group. They signed Elijah Moore like an hour after he came on here. And, you know, they feel that they have a good floor for the wide receivers. But admittedly, like you take a look at, like, they're not paying a number one wide receiver. They've gone away from that model. That's the model they want. And I agree with you. You don't have enough. But look, I mean, again, when you're missing, if you go with that model and you're missing three guys, it doesn't matter. Or if you go with a high end, if you're missing three guys, you know, it's going to be tough. Either way, totally feel you on that. Hey, Chris Brown.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Tasker here on One Bills Live, and it's time now for From the Armchair, which is presented by Raymore & Flanigan. Raymore & Flanigan is a proud partner of the Buffalo Bills, and here to help us out from the armchair is former Bills center Mitch Morse, who is also the host of the Monday Mornings with Mitch podcast. Mitch, welcome in. Good to have you with us. Help us sort through this unfortunate performance on Monday Night Football last night. You've seen this team, Mitch. You've been part of teams that have dropped back-to-back games and then course-corrected successfully afterwards. So before we get into some of the observations from last night's game, Mitch, maybe just settle everybody's nerves a little bit and talk about how this team in the past has successfully course-corrected from back-to-back defeats before.
Yeah, I think it comes down to a word I use often, which is candidness. You have internal candid conversations with yourself, and you have candid conversations within your team. You do some self-scouting, and then you just bring your lunch pail, man. It's the NFL. You're going to drop two games. That's part of the gig. You don't want it to be. Fans definitely don't want it to be. But if you ride this emotional roller coaster, dude, if you pander and if you listen to the outside noise too much, then this is just going to be a snowball effect. But if you kind of double down and hammer out what you know works and then just execute. I mean, to be honest, it just looked like a team that desperately needs a bye week. And I think this is one of the earlier bye weeks this team's had in quite some time. And Lord works in mysterious ways, man. These bye weeks tend to come to teams when they desperately need him the most, and I think this team is looking for one right now.
Yeah, it's a rough spot, particularly on a Tuesday morning, because last week you can kind of look at this at the Patriots game and say, well, we turned it over three times, and it was a three-point game. That's a game even in the midst of not playing their best, the Bills felt like they should have, could have, would have won that game, and that's the way the Bills get beat. You know, they kind of help their opponent. It was one of those close losses that we've seen. This one, it was not good. It was not good. This was a loss. They got beat by a team that was playing good, that was talented, and came to play, and they just couldn't match him. That's the worst part about this loss yesterday and how it was different from the Patriots loss.
Yeah. Steve, to your point, I thought this is a team, not knowing too much about the Falcons, but turning the TV off last night, I could tell you that I have the utmost respect for how they play, the talent they have, and just the physicality they bring and the explosiveness that they have. I thought that they, first of all, brought pressure more than any team we've played against, right? Well over 50%. And then that rush attack with Bijan Robinson, and I forget the other running back's name, but they had over 230 yards rushing. I mean, Bijan Robinson had over 8 yards a carry, and it was a credit to, of course, him, but I thought the offensive lineman blocked well. I thought the receivers for them blocked well. I thought they just came out and just flat out played really good football. So it definitely felt different than the week before. But that doesn't give you pause in what this team in Buffalo has. I think this is just one of those things that you have to learn from, right? Like from the jump, it just felt like the Bills were kind of trying to scratch from behind, claw from behind, even when it was a 7-7 ball game, right? Like it just felt very tough to feel like we were ever in the driver's seat. And that's okay. There's a learning experience in that just as much as there's a learning experience from last week.
Yeah, it was interesting. Raheem Morris wins the coin toss and elects to receive. You could tell he wanted to get a jump on the Bills, get ahead on the scoreboard, get the crowd into it, et cetera, and it worked for them at the start of that football game. All right, so observations from this one. Sam Franklin has been a standout on special teams since the Bills acquired him, and man, there was some jaw-jacking this whole game between him and some of those guys on the special teams units over on the other sideline for the Falcons, and it did not stop the entire game.
I thought Sam Franklin, he just jumped off the screen for me, man. You talk about a physical dude, a physical-ass dude on special teams, a tone setter. This dude does it all. I mean, year six guy, spent most of his time in Carolina. Just the heads-up play right there. And then I think his blocking and his tackling on this is remarkable. He has one of these punt returns where he's at the bottom of the screen here, and he just dogs a dude. He plays physically. He plays angry. Oh, my goodness, look at that. And then he gives him a little bit of extra stank right after that right there. He just a tone setter in a game that I felt like that might have been lacking a little bit. And there's certain precursors for that. And, of course, outside looking in, that might not be totally fair. But that's the kind of guy you want to put up on the screen the day after a game and say, look, this is how this game can go. This is the type of tone we want to set, the celebration we want to have of the game. Why don't we all implement this, find a way to reset during these few days, and then come back and play like this dude. Number 28's a stud.
Yeah, I thought so too. That's what a special teams guy can do. It's not just about making the tackle, or it's about playing with an edge and some grit and some aggression. And you know, and the whole every word you can use, just turning it up a notch where you get noticed for that. And that's what makes other guys want to do that too. And it's, you know, that's leadership.
Without a doubt. And I think when you saw that huge block, you see the offense coming on the field. I think in the fourth quarter, you see the offensive linemen all going, giving them, you know, dabs, nucks. That sets the tone, man. I mean, as an offense or defensive guy, you're watching the kickoff, whatever special teams is on, and you're looking for that tone set. That is one of those things that when you're running on the field and the boys are fired up and they're giddy and they're hooting and hollering with each other, it's just feeding that energy, right? And that permeates, even if you're not on the same side of the ball, special teams. I find that special teams unit sets the tone for most everything that you do. And it's maybe the most overlooked assignments, execution, and one of those things, similar to offensive line play. You don't really notice it until someone messes up. But I just love the way that dude played, man. It was so much fun.
Give me an idea, too, that we've seen this the last couple of weeks where – it just seems like the Bills, for lack of a better way to put it, they're not buttoned up. You got guys lining up off sides. You got, you know, that kind of thing going on. You can't – Josh has failed to execute a handoff on the end around. And I'm sure there's stuff in other areas of the game that aren't quite as self-evident. What is, you know, what is a course for this club in the coming 10 or 12 days or 14 days? You know, like, okay, we got to mind our business here.
Yeah, I think minding your business is well said, right? And minding your business takes many different facets. Of course, it comes down to the players. How could I have executed this game plan better? How could I have done that? So on and so forth in technique. But these bye weeks, what you don't see behind the scenes is these coaches might take one day, give themselves one good night of sleep. For coaches, that's about 7 hours of sleep is a good night of sleep. And then they self-scout like you would not believe. They go through every single rep of every single game. They go through tendencies. They go through the analytics department comes in. And they just see what has been working, what's not been working, why is this things we're not, that aren't working, not working. And then that way you have a game plan, a paper. You can put it, a tangible thing you can give these players and say, listen, this is the things we have been doing well. So let's keep that going. But here's the things that aren't going well. But now we haven't. Here's the script. Here it is. Let's go execute that now in practice and in games.
All right. Second half, Bills offense comes out and they go 22 personnel pretty much all the way down the field and put 7 on the board. You like that?
Yeah, I did, Chris. This is another thing that this team just keeps doing, which is executing after halftime. You have a 9-play drive where you don't even have a third down, right? That's so unique. You have these big chunks on first, convertible seconds, and then you have that big 16-yard catch and run for a touchdown. It's just everything you want. It's the execution. There's no negative plays, no net zero plays. And it just shows that this team is poised to make those adjustments, right? So you want to see those implemented early on in the game and then go from there.
Yeah, it did seem to key around a strong running game, and then even the play action that turned, you know, Ray Davis loose to get into the end zone. Give us an idea of what the mentality is, and I get it, you can't do the same play and the same thing, everyone, but what happens and what kind of adjustments do you expect from a defense that you're facing, you know, kind of counter that, get into that, they're going to do this, so we're going to do this, and we did this in the first drive of the second half, what's going to happen next? Give us an idea of those conversations of what you expect after a drive that the Bills put together like that. What's the next step?
Well, I think that really good teams, which the Bills are, players are just as upfront with coaches as coaches are with players in regards to what they think is going to work, what they see, some of the difficulties they're having. I thought one thing that the Falcons did very well, especially in the run game early, was these line stunts and movements, or going from a sub front to a base front, kind of making you have those late snap adjustments, which can just throw timing off a little bit. Like you said, they loaded the box up early. And one thing that I saw this game that I hadn't seen quite a bit is getting in that 22 personnel and stuff, not so much running outside zone or bouncing duo. They're running between the tackles and they're getting chunk yardage. And I thought that was really nifty. And I thought that was a real tone setting thing. A lot of stuff's thrown around with offensive line tone setting, but when you can run between the tackles, get these double teams going and get your guy an opportunity to maneuver, be patient, and then hit a hole, which James Cook might be the best in the NFL doing, that's what you want to see. So it's also the coaches coming out, seeing like, hey, listen, this is something we definitely thought was going to work. They're presenting a different front. That's not it. Or more importantly, here are our protection rules. Here are the blitzes that we've seen quite a bit. Here are just some reminders, or you might even make protection changes, like rules. Yeah, okay, we had this rule all week. That's not applicable to this game plan. This is the new rule. That way you guys get, I thought the one thing that the Falcons did very well was they made it difficult for identification and stunts, and they put a lot of pressure on their running backs in that pass protection. So it's just constant communication. I know that was a weird roundabout way of answering that, but it just comes down to lines of communication.
Yeah, that helps. You touched on, you know, the reset here at the bye, but I want you to touch a little bit more on what we hear Coach McDermott talk about all the time, the player-driven leadership in the locker room. You're talking about intrinsic conversations that need to happen, and I know the players in this locker room, to a man, are going to look in the mirror, but what kind of leaders have to step forward when maybe the standard isn't being met from a performance standpoint? To what do those conversations sound like player to player to maybe get more out of a guy that maybe isn't playing as good as his teammates know he can?
Sure. That's a good question. It kind of comes down to knowing your teammate to see how he digests different information or how he gets himself fired up or gets going, right? Some guys need an ass chewing. Some guys are their harshest critics, so they just need some affirmation. Some guys just need someone to chat with or talk to. Some guys, if they want, maybe these leaders, maybe they feel like they can't be as vocal because they haven't been playing the best football themselves, or they're a little injured, or they're a little bit outside themselves. So first things first, we want this season to go as beautifully as possible. Yes, we've dropped two games before the bye week. I'm going to remove myself completely as a player. I'm going to find at least 48 to 72 hours where if I have a family, fully invested in my family. If I have an injury, yes, I'm in there to take care of my injury, take care of my wounds and then get out of the building. So that when it's time, because they'll start watching football that next weekend, they'll get that itch, they'll have those thoughts again, but you give yourself an opportunity to at least hold on to it. Hold it, and it's not slipping through your fingers because you feel like you're drowning because you're just, your body's shot, or you've just been grinding at this too long through training camp and stuff. It just give yourself a mental kind of reprieve, and that way you can be the best leader, I mean, the best delegator, the best follower, whatever it may be. You just have to find a way to remove yourself so that when you make these late game pushes, you make this late season push, hopefully into the playoffs, then you give yourself an opportunity to not be burnt out by them.
So one of the things that's followed this team around, even since training camp, is, you know, the injuries. And it's a lot of, there hasn't been too many catastrophic injuries, but this guy's down, that guy's down, now he's back down again. Give us an idea of the mentality and the drag it is on the total team, and even the guys that are healthy, the total mentality of, we're got to do this with, you know, now he's hurt, now this guy's hurt, we don't have all our best players, we're going to have to play this. And give us an idea of the mentality and the drag that this injury list has as you go forward, and it just seems to continue and continue and continue.
Yeah, it can be a drag if you let it. You know, when you're hurt, Steve, and you know, you can attest to this, when guys are off dealing with those injuries, whether they're on IR or out week to week, sometimes if you're one of those guys, you feel like you're not part of the team because you're not connecting with the guys. And and that's not the case, right? You're just so – usually guys are so enthralled with the process of what that day entails, what's going on, that you really like, okay, Dalton Kincaid's out. All right, well, then let's not worry about that because we can't focus on that. But what does kind of, I would say, snowball a little bit is when you're one of those leaders and you're one of those guys and you're getting these injuries and it's nagging you and you're not yourself. You're not the player you know you want to be. In that way, you can't, you know, relieve the way you think you should. So, yeah, I feel like it is kind of a strange injury bug this team's got. I don't know if it's totally unavoidable, but he gives you an opportunity this week just to at least catch your breath, have a game plan, and you're not scrambling, especially on a short week after a Monday, to get guys out on Sunday.
Mitch, thanks for the time. As always, we appreciate it. That is From the Armchair, presented by Raymore and Flanagan with Mitch Morse. And a little bit of a silver lining here. Coming out of the bye, the Bills are 8-0 under Sean McDermott. So they'll be on the road at Carolina in week 8 coming off the bye.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, well, this took a turn for the worse. Bills are now 4-2. So again, we can't, as you know, per yesterday's conversation, we can't talk about whether they would play their starters if they were in week 16 and 0.
Yeah, no, I don't think
that's out.
I don't think that's called for.
That's all the way out.
That
we don't have that.
Yeah,
that's gone.
That is
6 forever
feet under that conversation
until next year.
Right.
Scared.
I'm reasonably shook. Yeah. You know, I think you can probably, well, choose to, or actually just objectively find some comfort in the fact that this is a fifth season in a row where they've dropped two games in a row, and not unlike last year, they dropped two in a row early after starting 3-0, then they fell to 3-2. They didn't have a bye to rest up and figure things out, but they righted the ship and ended up, you know, pulling away and winning the division by December 1st. The difference, the thing that doesn't give you comfort, doesn't give me comfort in that scenario now, is that there is a significant difference this year, and that lies in the fact that the division is in a complete and total wasteland. New England is there now.
It's a partial wasteland.
Sure, but there's at least a team there that is, you know, the Jets and Miami are, forget about them, but New England is live. They're ahead of you. And that's different. Like, so whatever missteps you could endure last year, I never really felt at 3-2 in danger of the division not being won. But given New England's schedule, I think you're going to be looking at a race now, even if the Bills get on track. Like, I don't expect both of these teams to run the table or anything, but from here to the wire. But they're going to have to deal with the Patriots in a way that I was not really ready for 2 weeks ago.
The thing about it all, as we talked about yesterday, is for the regular season to be what you want, they have to finish above everybody in the conference. And that easily has taken a hit. I mean, two straight losses. Like you say, they've done it before, and they've never gotten the one. So last year they lost three games, and they didn't get there, even with the tiebreaker over the team that did.
Right.
So it's New England. I think the right point was made last week about New England, or at least for me the right point, which is as easy as their schedule is, they're going to lose three or four or five more times.
I don't think they're good enough to just roll over people.
No, but...
I don't think the Bills are anymore either.
Well, if that happens, if the Patriots finish 11-6, which I'm sorry, the cognitive dissonance with these records is still like... anybody over the age of eight, you should probably be upset at hearing a record like that. And I don't blame you because I'm upset even saying it. But if the Patriots finish 11-6, then okay, well... maybe you've split with them. Maybe you beat them outright 12-5. Is that the one seed? Like, what's the one seed? Is it the Colts? Is it the Steelers? Like, it could be a year like the Tennessee year where the one loses five or six games. Like, that's probably what you want.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only thing that matters. Like, if the Bills are 11-6 and the Patriots win 12 games, and the Bills are the five, which is probably what it is if they are 11-6 and don't win the AFC East, and they go to Pittsburgh in the first. I can live with that. Like that doesn't, like right now as we're talking, tell me that that's what they are. It doesn't really eliminate any sort of Super Bowl conversation or cancel such conversation.
I agree.
But there's no advantage in that. Like you're playing on the road the whole way.
Right. And
without rest.
Yeah. And... you know, I need to see what, you know, I don't have answers yet. What are they going to become on offense? Like, what is going to become of them on offense, I think, is a good question. Last year, they pivoted after those two losses and made a trade for a receiver. And I don't know what makes it less likely to happen this year. There's two things that I think are in play. It's Bean doubling down on Everybody Eats in such a public fashion that I wonder if objectively he will find himself to a field where he can make a trade for a receiver and admit that he was wrong.
What a great conversation
to be
that
as
is.
Adversarial and antagonistic about the entire subject to begin with. There's that. And if I want to give a person like that the benefit of the doubt. You have a team to run, and you have a situation that may need addressing. Plenty of people out here are going to think it needs addressing. And I would like to think he wouldn't refuse to do it on some principle because of his opinion back in April. But I don't know. I don't know, right? But I would like to. But even so, he's got to want to do it. And then there's also that they did it last year. And it didn't work.
No, it didn't.
And so, those two things might have me less excited. I think last year I was expecting them to make a receiver trade, but when they lost those two games, they got to do something.
And they did.
This year it's harder for me to say that. I think the need is just as obvious. Keon Coleman has been a ghost since opening night. Josh Palmer caught a couple of passes and got hurt, and okay, but. Look at the drives from last night's game. I mean, you know they scored 14 points. So you know they only had two scoring drives. There's in the second half, in the fourth quarter, it's three and out, three and out, three and out, 0 yards. Josh Allen is the quarterback of this team.
Six punts.
It is just incredible that you're that stuck with that talent behind center.
Four and outs.
Is incredible. Yeah. So I don't know what they can do about it if they don't add someone, because you know Curtis Samuel missed last night. I don't care. That's not fixing anything. And so Palmer is the only, like, that looked like it was going to work last night. Maybe, right? There's a couple of plays, but then he gets hurt, and he's hurt. So how long does that last? If that suddenly, like, he was also a ghost before last night. After opening night. And so am I supposed to count on that as the linchpin to fix this passing offense? I think it's the first time since Allen has ascended to this level where I have felt really like I'm not sure what the answer is for them on offense right now.
We could talk about this all week, and we will, because there's no game next week. But in the pregame show, we were talking about, I was sort of stuck on this idea that it was Shakir's game because Atlanta had lost its slot corner and Kincaid wasn't going to play. So here's the perfect 3 for 33. You want to see what a wide receiver one looks like? Atlanta.
Right.
You want to see what a running back one looks like, actually? I mean, Robinson. Enough with the James Cook, how elite he is. Like, you finally played against one. Or now it's the second time this year, and what did Henry go for against the Bills? The same, like, 180 or something like that? That's not James Cook. James Cook is not the problem. And I don't even know if Shakir or this point about the passing offense is the problem, because we know from experience that the Bills have overcome this sort of adversity in, you know, several of these seasons. Like, they're still good enough to do that. But I just thought they got, like, really out. I physical is not a word. I refuse. What's the actual word for that? It's a real word.
Manhandled.
Like, they just were not the better team in this game against Atlanta. They got badly outgained. They got hit at every turn. Even Allen, like, he got hit a lot in this game. And so, what does that tell you? Is that Houston? Is that the same thing as losing to Houston last year? That was this game, unlike that last year. There's no fluke element to it, I think. Like, this game was winnable.
Absolutely was winnable. The entire second half of the game was winnable.
But it's not about, like, one thing that happened,
right?
Like a bounce,
right,
or a call. This was just like, yeah, they couldn't do it.
Right.
And last, a lot of their losses, like, this is really a compliment, a lot of their losses have been games where we go, wow. I mean, even last week was a game where you go, like, oh, jeez, except for these miracle passes to Diggs or the bounces on fumbles, like, you win. That's what it's Pleasantville. I mean, the Bills are Pleasantville. They're used to, wait a minute. I thought what do you mean the phrase is you can't win them all? We do win them all. And now this is a game against the Atlanta Falcons in prime time, where Allen is often, like, just way up here, and the next day we spend talking about his MVP Hall of Fame status. The Atlanta Falcons were just, like, better than the Bills, weren't they? Like, they were better.
Better and able to, as the game went on, I think, just further deploy the tactics that they started with. Like, we talked about it in the run-up to the game. This is the most blitz-heavy team in the league by a significant margin. And they opened the game that way. And as the game went on, that's where the offense and not having someone that can break the spell that's been cast on you is so important, because the only way to slow that down is to make a play, right? You got to break their back. You got to hit a 6-yard slant and someone, there's nobody there and he's just going. And that just did not happen. And so what does Atlanta do? We sent six. Let's send six again. It doesn't matter. They can't hurt us.
Right.
That was the game, I think, largely, is they can't hurt us if we try to cover with four or five back here. So why not just keep doing it?
And then Atlanta on offense. Penix. Did you like him? He's fine, right?
I mean,
the
first half was really good, but it was mostly just guys in open spots in the zone.
He completed 20 passes, all but four to two guys. 16 of 20 to two guys. Like, that's not something you can coach against. I got two. I mean, no disrespect to McDermott. He doesn't have to prove anything more for me on, like, his acumen when it comes to coaching defense. They're down guys, you know, I recognize that. I don't think Sean McDermott is, like, sort of on the table whether he's a good defensive coach. Or Babich, you know, for that matter. They've done really well. But this defense is so limited. Again, against the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, that's apparently a team in the league that they win this game like they did. And 16 of 20 completions went to two guys, London and Robinson. And the Bills could not take that away. And they've taken a lot of good players away.
Right. But to not be able to take one receiver away is alarming.
10 for London on 16 targets. Like, anything they wanted. He was great, but, like, whatever. There's no answer. Robinson is 6 for 68. Pitts is 3 for 18, that guy. I mean, he falls down when they throw him the ball.
He's a joke.
And then 1 for 6 to Algier. That's it. We were talking on the pregame show, like, is there an anytime touchdown bet on Atlanta? I'm like, and I'm sort of already making excuses by saying this. I don't know who it would be. Like, there's nobody. Ray McLeod is a healthy scratch. There's nobody else right. to worry about. And it didn't matter. There were still, like, the Falcons kind of did whatever they wanted. End of the game. I tweeted this. It looked to me like, and this is a little bit sort of narrative, which I am embarrassed to admit, but it looked to me like the Falcons did not know how to close out that game. They just didn't really know what to do. And the Bills still let them off the hook.
Right.
Like, it was just the last drive was they're not running down the play clock. They're throwing passes. Like, they're not sort of aware.
Right.
Allen would never. Like, the Bills in that spot would never lose that game if they had a 7-point lead with the ball in 6 minutes. They would never lose that game. Like, he would just know he'd run the play clock down. They'd call the right plays. They wouldn't even need anything good. They'd maybe have a 4th-and-1 and tush-push it. They would never – there would be no threat of them losing that game. Atlanta – now, Atlanta did win.
Right.
But they kind of looked like they didn't know what to do.
The closest you could get to a one thing that really mattered in the game – is that pass that Penix throws right to Shaq Thompson, and Thompson drops. Like, that's not a hard play. Easy for me to say, but whatever. It's not. It was right there, both hands on it. He just didn't catch it.
Yep.
And like that. That is maybe the only play. That could have. You probably tie the game if he catches that ball.
Well, but what do you want to say? He's a backup.
Right. Right. Yeah, right. I think it's there for you to say if Bernard is in the game, we saw him make that play 2 weeks ago. Maybe he makes the same play except runs all the way down, for a touchdown this time. Because there's a lot of room there. I wouldn't assume Shaq Thompson necessarily would have scored. If someone on Atlanta really tried to chase him, they probably would have caught him.
But that, but that's what you're up against. Right. That's what McDermott is up against, is sort of the injury luck and, they're depleted. That'll be different. Their next time out. That'll be different. Whether they get injured guys back, they'll get Hoyt back. He'll make his debut, Ogunjobi. They lose Daquan Jones in the warm-ups. I mean, you just don't get all the luck.
Right.
And the Bills haven't had more than their share of luck this year. They've had some, but they didn't. They lost a turnover. We'll see if they can break the record for, let's hope not.
Most games losing.
The most games in a row.
Yeah.
Well, it was a really... I'm a little scared.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you want to be a little bit because, you brought up Bean and the receiver thing. That is really like 9 or 10 out of 10 for a juicy conversation. Like, what is he thinking? Is he defiant? He was defiant the day after the draft to the point of, like, you probably do too. I go on shows to talk about the Bills. Like, once or twice a week. They're always asking me about that conversation. I wasn't even in the room.
Right.
But everybody knows about the time Brandon Bean flipped out on the media, which was us, for harping on how they don't have good enough receivers. Then he did the tour, and then he went to Tyler and told Tyler Dunn, in so many words, what are they even talking about? I signed Josh Palmer, who's had a 40 reception year in his career once. I was just like, okay. I mean, you did set the franchise record in scoring. All that is true. Mm-hmm. Like, but they're reasonable people. Well, I guess I'm biased. Reasonable people seriously questioned you and this. And I don't know. What do you say today? Does he want to double back and trade for this year's Amari Cooper? Does he want to do that? Who even is it? Is it somebody who's shot? Like, I mean, they have scouts. They whiffed on that.
You'd like to do better than you did last year if you are going to do it.
Is he going
to
do that again? I mean, I think I'd respect it because it's like not being stuck like the kid's tongue in the Christmas Story to the pole. Like you're not just like completely unavailable to be removed from the take.
Just because you made a spectacle of the whole situation and of yourself to an extent back in April doesn't mean you shouldn't see your way clear to still do what needs to be done.
But what is the move? Last year, at least there was a guy who had had a pretty big season before the year before who was gettable. Cost him a third round pick. That's not nothing.
Right.
I mean, but it's a long time ago now. It was Amari Cooper. What did Dallas get for Amari Cooper when he was like not shot? A fifth or something like that? Anyway, third round pick. They did it. I didn't object to it. I wouldn't this year. I think probably if they did the same a similar right. version of that. But is he not too proud? Like, is he going to look? I mean, Elijah Moore. So maybe I'm wrong about this, and I'm wrong about interpreting body language often enough when it comes to guys because, you know, you can't know. But Allen threw a pass to Elijah Moore last night up the right sideline. And Moore kept going, and Allen threw to nobody.
Yeah, it looked like he thought Moore was going to stop.
And you know what Allen did? Like, he never calls – he's not Dan Marino. Like, he never gets in anybody's face. He's really cognizant of what not to look
is
like.
Is this both hands on the helmet?
No, close. He ripped both sides of the chin strap off, like, and then ran off the field. That looked to me – like, he was ticked. Like, that, I'm not going to be like, you know, I'm not going to point at you. I'm not going to yell at you because he's a leader and he knows how that can look. But he sort of, like, rips both of the sides of the chin strap off. Like, damn it. Just, why would he ever throw to wide open space? Like, isn't he supposed to know what the play is? He's not infallible. So, you know, that
just might be one of those things where he, you know, the receivers and quarterbacks talk a lot about understanding the leverage and the coverage. And when it's like this, I expect you to do that. And it looked like instead Moore did that instead of this on that play. And like that's it. And it's all it can take. And the frustration. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good catch, like noticing him because I'm all ears when I hear McDermott saying it was way too hard for him. And I think Allen is feeling that. Like, he looked to me about as frustrated as I can remember him looking during a game.
And he took some shots. Is he fine? I guess we want to assume so, but he played through the game, but he took
the same hand he hurt last year. Yeah, all I thought was it's not his throwing hand good. So, well, yeah, I don't know.
He took some hits in this game. Well, McDermott's right. It wasn't easy. And, you know, their next game is against Carolina, which A, is Carolina, B, beat last night's team 30-0.
Yeah, that happened.
Atlanta did that to them.
Such a weird game, too, in that the play at the end of the half sort of shades the way you felt going into halftime. Like, it was still 21-7, but it felt so close to being 28-7. And 28-7 feels like, I mean, that's probably really hard. 21-7 proved to be too much, as it turned out. But really, it's a couple of scores. And they got one right away and then just could not do it again. But, you know, halftime comes and goes, and it feels like to me, I'm thinking, man, it's gonna be a day talking about the defense and all the draft picks and all the different assets they poured into it, and they just don't have it, and how much, you know, stock you want to put in the injuries and all this sort of stuff. And by the time the game's over, it's flipped around completely to like my offense cannot move the ball.
It's both.
It is both.
Right? I mean, which unit do you trust more? I trust the offense more.
Which is really one of the inception points of the conversation about pouring resources into receiver and that side of the ball. Like, you're good there, be great there. Or you're great there, be, you know, undeniable there. Just keep going on that side. Whatever's going to happen on defense is going to happen on defense. I mean, they're all banged up and they hold Atlanta 3 points in the second half of this game. With, like, Joe Andreessen and Cam Lewis and Jamarcus Ingram playing. So.
It's fair.
So what? So.
And rap playing.
Rap.
Rapp is a story. That guy just loves to come in late, even if it's his friendly fire. Yeah, right, he
Bernard,
just loves
play
to
Bernard
be late.
Hurt on. He's
oh,
there
my
to
goodness.
Add
Can he just ever not be late? Anyway, this is what a loss sounds like.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.